The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of OneClick Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built natively for e-commerce sellers. Fulfill streamlines the complexity in your business to save you time and money. From smart order routing to warehouse management, accounting to inventory tracking, they take all of your complexity and all the things that take a lot of time and manual effort and streamline them under one unified tool. Their clients range from seven-figure brands all the way through companies doing hundreds of millions of dollars per year so they can grow and scale with you. And they're the highest rated ERP in our community of private sellers, according to member reviews, scoring higher than Odoo, Skubana, Brightpearl, and yes, even NetSuite. Actually scored quite a bit higher than NetSuite. So if you want to streamline the complexity in your business, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And if you own a business, you know that one of the hardest things, if not the hardest thing, in my opinion, the hardest thing in business is people, is leading people, is developing people, is doing that well. And a big part of that is compensation. How do you think about incentivizing, rewarding, aligning the interests of your company with your key people? And it becomes only more important as you grow, and it becomes exponentially more important as you get ready to sell, especially if you want to have that team in place for the group that's going to be buying it. And joining me today is Byron McFarland. He is an equity comp and ownership succession strategist for Main Street and mid-market businesses. He's the owner and principal at the McFarland Group. And he lives and breathes this stuff. He knows it has helped countless firms designing compensation plans. And we're going to be going through the nuts and bolts of that today. Was had the chance to do a session with him, kind of a private session with him and some of our UCF members a little earlier. So a little, not totally new, but I've got a few things I could ask him about. And so excited to dive in. And we're going to be talking about retention plans, how to structure retention plans that keep key people around, especially if you're going to sell, not always, but especially if you're going to sell plans that reward future performance. So performance-based compensation plans to really drive people to get results for your business. And then finally, how you should think about a plan if you're recruiting someone. So we're going to get into all this. Byron, good to have you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you very much for the invitation.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking, I know you're a huge fisherman, so
yeah.
I don't know if you had to cut any trips short, but regardless, it's good to have you here. We'll talk about that, geek out about that at the back end here.
Yeah, I love geeking out about fishing.
Yeah, let's kind of move towards talking about the first type of compensation and incentive plans, which is a retention plan. So the idea being, hey, the goal here is to keep this employee, a key employee around, either because I can't afford to lose them, or I'm selling a business and I want to make sure that they're going to stick around during and after that transition. So one of the things I thought that was most interesting, it seems very obvious, but I'm guessing not a lot of people do it. Maybe I'm wrong. You can correct me. But just is sitting down with someone, that key team person, key team member, and saying, what's coming up in your life? Like, what's going on with you? What are your goals? What do you really want to do? How much is a meaningful amount to you? Having a very candid discussion with numbers, which, yeah, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe people don't do that as much, but you said that's one of the best things you can do to get a sense of you know, of how to start.
Yeah. Yeah. It's by far it's the highest value experience. I just finished one of those interviews prior to our taping of this call today. And at the end of the interview, the key employee was so gracious and grateful for somebody actually caring enough to hire somebody to ask them what they want. So all the goodwill went to the employer. You know, I was the vessel for it, but the expression of that gratitude was genuine. And it's not altogether that common for a person to actually be asked those questions. And I coach my, well, when I do workshops, I coach the business owners that are at the workshop. You're having a conversation with them and you're asking them about what's their vision for themselves and the organization. Where do they want to go? What do they see as opportunities for them to realize their personal dream, whatever that may be. And this young man that I taught you today, I said, well, what would you do if the company sold? Which is the goal, of course, in all companies, to sell it. And he said, I'd love to take the resources I get, take a little time off, and then put together workshops, do consulting in the industry. So my vision of myself would be continue to stay in the industry, but migrate over to independent contractor so that I could spend the time that I have with my children as they're getting into college, et cetera. So it was really nice to hear that, you know, he had a vision for himself if something were to change in his relationship. And then we further clarified, what is it that you would want in the way of a lifestyle? And he admitted, I don't know. And so at that point, we suggested that he needed to meet with a financial planner, get clarity on what his financial goals with him and his wife. And then we could then, you know, ultimately over time, align his goals with the financial plan with the company's goals, have a clarity, a line of sight as to how the company then can ultimately help him realize his financial security through either the profit taking, the appreciation in value, and then the value that's realized at a sale. And very few people do that, but it creates so much confidence in the mind of the key employee that now I've got a plan. I know how I can realize that plan. I know what I need to do in my role. And, you know, maybe that role evolves over time, but by and large, they have a sense of confidence and commitment to the organization that perhaps may have been there, and we're just enhancing the quality of that experience they have with the company.
I got to ask you, I mean, you always hear you'll see these clickbaity articles on CNBC, you know, employees don't care about compensation, they just want to be valued, or vice versa, the hard side, people aren't paying. And none of those writers do what you do, where you sit down with key employees and you really get a good sense for, like, what does this person care about? Like, A, you get a real good sense, even if you're not explicitly asking the question, what's important to them financially and otherwise. And so, not really, it's kind of tangentially related to what we're talking about, but what do you see? Most of the people listening to this are business owners, and they have that owner mindset. And I think it's easy to forget that's not the mindset that your team has, understandably, because they're not the owners. No one's going to care about your business as much as you. So given all the interviews you've done over the years and years, do you see a theme? Like, do you see a theme of what people really care about? Obviously there's both, but yeah. What if you were going to write that article for CNBC, what would you say, given your actual real experience with it? What do team members care about the most?
Well, I would argue that there are more people that we're talking to in those positions that have the owner's mindset than, let's say, as a pool of individuals. These people are going to be as close to the owner's mindset as an owner would be, mm-hmm. because they're in on the discussions with the owner in business planning, talking about risks and understanding capital expenditures and the cost of money if the owner is really truly transparent. And that, I don't know if you knew this or not, but the Small Business Administration keeps track of the new business starts each year. And in 2021, there were 5 million new businesses started. In 2020, there were 4.4 million new businesses started. That was up 50% from the previous 10 years. So there is a tremendous amount of owner's mindset out there. And so most of your members, maybe not all, but I bet a lot of them, were somebody else's key employee who felt like they could do it better or could do it as well for themselves because the organization they were with didn't appreciate their contribution or reward them for their contribution. I don't know, but those tend to be why people decided to form their own organization. So I find that most people want to be heard in a very safe environment, and we make the environment safe. We're not grilling them. And we're asking them open-ended questions as to what is it that you want? What do you want for your family? Do you want your children to be college educated, and do you want them to work for their education, or would you prefer to help them? Do you want to have a more interesting lifestyle by traveling? What is it that you and your wife or husband want to do if you have more free time? And then if you could retire, then what would you do in retirement? What hobbies do you enjoy? And most people, these types of discussions are a little bit intimidating because they've never really been able to think clearly about them in an environment where somebody wasn't trying to sell them something. So if you think about it, the most common financial advisor who is out there meeting with individuals at that level is probably a commission-based salesperson selling a financial instrument, whether it be life or disability insurance or mutual funds or whatever. So perhaps there's a little resistance to reveal that to them. And then they might be inclined to say to a person who has that commission orientation, I'm not going to share with you my true vision because I'm a little concerned you're going to use it against me somehow. And so we're not selling products, so we're not looking to install a product. But I'd say that most people just want to improve the opportunities for their children if they have them, increase their time freedom if it's available to them. And then with that time, they want to be able to do something that is meaningful. Perhaps it's pursue a hobby that they have a lot of passion for. Like me, I'm a diehard trout fisherman, and every free minute I have, I want to be on the water casting to rising trout. And I talk to young men and young women who are, well, I like to water ski or snow ski or whatever. Well, if you could, where would you go? What does it take to live a life like that? And then they start to explore that. And then that imagination energy then starts to get infused into the discussion. And then they start to reveal to me what they really want.
That's cool. I bet those are some cool discussions to have and watch those kind of dreams unfold. And then, so you chat with these team members, you get a sense, okay, I care about where you're going here. I want to help you kind of think through your dreams for the future and your vision for the future. Let's try to put a price to that as well. And then once you have that, then thinking about plan design. So I think the high level that you mentioned when we talked before was you're looking for something that a retention plan that somehow can put kind of 15 to 30% of the candidate's base comp per year into this retention. So after maybe 3 years, you've got something that makes up about, 70 to 100% of their annual salary. And that's something that vests over time, investing in terms of becomes unlocked or paid out over time in order to, make them not want to leave. So is that a fair summary of kind of how you, obviously you can do it a lot of ways, but the ways that you kind of, from percentages and timelines, you think about doing retention-based plans?
Yeah, those guidelines I did share with the group, and that there's a reference to the term meaningful, and that one of the requirements for a plan to work retention-wise, that it needs to be meaningful. And so the award amount of 15 to 30% is considered a meaningful sum of money. And then over the course of 3 to 6 years, your goal is to create an account balance that would be very tough to walk away from. Meaning that if a recruiter called and offered you a 25 or 30% raise on your salary, you'd be looking, oh man, I'd be leaving behind 60 or 100% of my salary in this bonus. Why? That's not a fair exchange. So that the likelihood of another employer matching that is very low. So we're trying to build a moat around the people that are contributing value to the organization and look at it as an insurance premium. And that it costs, I've been seeing ranges of 2.5 to 3 times salary just to get somebody that was performing at a high level replaced, trained, integrated, and functioning in the organization. So if that's the case, then setting aside 60 to 100% of their comp in some form of program that would be paid out in the future, subject to vesting and forfeiture if they left early, seems like a fair bargain for the employer.
It does. And then what's the vesting schedule for that? So let's say you're doing that. Let's say someone's making $100K per year. You give them a $25,000 bonus that goes into the pool. How does that unlock over time?
Yeah, that's the that's the formulary now. We were talking about there's a lot of variables in there. Is it what's going on in the organization and how are we creating the value? Is the value being created out of appreciation in the business? And if it is, then is that that's usually the result of more profit that's available to the owner. So we typically try to do is the key to these plans is to make them feel tangible to the participants. So at some point in not too distant future, they're able to tap into that value. So what we do is we create what we call in-service windows, where we allow the participant to withdraw a percentage of the account balance at, say, at the third to the sixth year, depending upon the rate of growth of the company. So if the company, a lot of times, Andrew, what we'll do is if the company's grown at a really high rate and at some point they've got to stop growing at that rate because they need to kind of catch up, catch their breath, we'll assume that there's going to be some cash available that isn't being reinvested and we're going to open up a window and start making, you know, partial payments to the participant, saying that, let's say they got 3 years at 40% or something like that, and then they're going to level off. We're going to say, well, in the fourth year, we're going to allow the participant to take 30 to 50% of their account balance out. And what we want to do is we want to leave enough in the account balance that there's still that moat around them of roughly 60%. So if they've got 100% of their salary in there, we might say, okay, you can take out 40 to 50, knowing that what's left in there is still a meaningful sum and they're not going to want to walk away from that. But at least they can share with their wife or husband, these resources are going to be available to us if we are successful. And the closer they get to the actual payout date, then it's kind of like a vacation that you've planned a year or two in advance. You get to enjoy the whole pre-buildup to the vacation. You know, that's the advantage of planning a vacation in advance, because you can talk about what you're going to do when you're there. And you can do the same thing with these plans. You could say, in 2 years, we're going to remodel the kitchen, or we're going to take the trip that we always wanted to take, or I'm going to buy the bass boat or the ski boat or whatever, you know, whatever it is. They get a chance to start really emotionalizing that reward. And that's what we found to be really effective for these in-service payout plans.
That's cool. So you can have you can have a termination date where they pay out, maybe it's 6 years, give them some access to that early. And then of course, if they're still around, you can keep continuing to do these so that portions, they're almost like a ladder, right? Like the longer they stay, there's always some that unlocks. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, so that was retention. Let's talk about incentive plans that really reward performance and helping people drive results, have an owner's mindset, or have even more of an owner's mindset. And before we get into the nitty gritty here, we kind of talked a little bit about this before we hopped on the mics, but before we hit record, how well do these work from a human psychology standpoint? Again, going back to your clickbaity kind of online articles or even just, you know, some studies that maybe they're real studies or pseudo studies. But I think we've all read these studies that like, hey, incentives sound great if I pay you to do something. But once you go from something that's a very rote job, maybe you're counting beans or you know, screwing, you know, bolts on an assembly line, that where there's not a whole lot of mental capacity required to do that, the more complex the job becomes, you have decreasing results from offering, you know, incentives, monetary based incentives to perform in there. And it's just, sure, you know exactly the studies I'm talking about. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Like, is that something that you've seen? Do you think there's merit to that? How much? And how should you be thinking about that potential kind of aspect of the human brain when we're thinking about these performance-based compensation plans?
Well, we are creatures of tribes. Our ancestors are all here. We're here because our ancestors were able to get along well enough with other people in a group to sustain themselves through harsh winters or through attacks from other groups. So people are naturally inclined to migrate to a kind of an environment where they're a member of a team. And that's what's lost now, is that there's not enough understanding of what responsibility people have in their community or their tribe. And so I don't know if I'm making widgets and all I'm doing is stamping out widgets every day, and I never talk to anybody about how my role influences the role down the way, and how when I take a break and don't pay attention to, you know, keeping the machine flowing, the people down the way, then they get interrupted or et cetera. There's not enough understanding of how people work together. And the organization that has done a fabulous job at preparing curriculum or lessons for that is the Great Game of Business. So if anyone who's listening to this that is trying to motivate their rank and file staff, the Great Game of Business teaches you how to go about establishing rules and games that allow people to understand how their role contributes to the greater good of the tribe. So if the organization doesn't plan and then comes out with a incentive plan that says, this is where we're going, it's probably not going to work because no one's going to really understand, well, what do I have to do to make this happen? Fortunately for us, we don't run into that because there's the proliferation of planning tools is ubiquitous. Everybody's using EOS or ScaleMap or PetraCoach or somebody like that to organize their business planning. So tying those business plan outcomes, those targets, those goals to the reward structure, we find works very well because now people can see, okay, this is what's in it for me. And when it gets right down to it, that's really where your biggest concern is.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log into our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active forum with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members, you know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member-only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. And you mentioned too, forecasts a lot of times get a bad rap because they're just, you know, they're made up numbers for the future with maybe a little bit of reality, you know, sprinkled on top. But can you talk about why a forecast is really important for when you're designing a performance-based plan like this?
Yes, the purpose of the forecast for us isn't to sell the participant on the plan as it is to reveal to the participant how the plan could enrich their life. We want to be able to give their imagination some fertilizer. We want to show them, we have a 3-range, we have a, let's say, maybe not worst case, but 75% of target, and then 120% of target. We're showing them, you know, if you don't hit your target, but you hit 75%, here's what's possible. If you hit your target, you know, year over year for the next 2 or 3 periods, here's what's possible. And if you blow it out a year or so, then here's what's possible. And we find that what they're looking for in that is, okay, I can see how this works, because now they get to see how the math works, and then they can then start to emotionalize the result. Like, okay, if we do, then they start looking for solutions to perhaps problems that would keep them from hitting the 100% target. And they become really quite self-oriented in a good way because they're looking for ways that to reduce the resistance of the organization to meet its goals. That's why we use the model. And we forecast business value, we forecast financial results, forecast participants' account statements, forecast the potential liability to the business owner, which is really helpful so they get a sense of what kind of liability they're creating for themselves that they're going to have to resolve either at sale or through retained earnings or profit. We love forecasts.
And then also on the reward side, you recommend strongly having the payment or the vesting tied to not just a single outcome, not a binary result, but a range of outcomes. So that, because it seems like you could get into some real problematic issues where I'll let you speak to it, but you recommend the range.
Yeah, well, in performance equity, it's defining that the equity is revealed or made available to the participant based upon performance. And what we don't want to do is have an all or nothing performance arrangement. We want to create if we hit 75% of target, we're still probably more valuable than we were last year. We're just not as valuable as we thought we could be, but there are outcomes that are out of control of the participants, macroeconomic forces that could adversely affect your organization's performance, but you're working hard, everybody's delivering results, or it's not like they threw their hands up. They're still working towards a goal. And if you remove that threshold of being to get into the money and it's all or nothing, then they go, well, we're not going to make the goal, so might as well not do anything, sandbag for the next year. Mm-hmm. But if we blow it out and it caps at say 100%, then they'd be like, well, hell, let's hold some of that back for the next year so we get a good running start at the next year. Well, we don't want that. We want to get as much as we can in the year that it's available to us and try to figure out how to manage the next year. And then so we tend to try to tie vesting schedules to the business results. So if you're, let's say that we break the vesting schedule up into if you hit the target, 100% of the target every year for the next 3 years, then you're fully vested. Then that means it's 75% for the next 3 years. It might take 4 to 5 years to vest. But if you hit if you hit 125% of the target in year one, you might accelerate the vesting in 2.5 years or something like that. So we want to create an inducement for the participant to want to try to really push through and deliver whatever results are available to the organization in the year that they're pursuing them.
Got it. Makes sense. And then starting to get a little low on time, but want to jump quickly to recruiting. And some of the things, a lot of this will still apply to recruiting, but the two things that stood out to me in your presentation earlier was one, when you're recruiting someone, make sure you ask them what type of compensation, or not just a compensation, but their incentive plan that they're on now versus equity or bonus, because you want to know where they're at. Just like you wouldn't want to offer someone 100K if they're making 160. Like you need to know what you need to match up with, which I thought was important. And then the second thing too was making sure you actually have an incentive plan in place in terms of the bones for it, the structure, the legal kind of container before you start interviewing. Because if you're in the middle of the interviewing process and you're telling someone about this plan and they ask about it and they ask about the particulars and you say, oh, well, we haven't set it up yet, but it's coming. It does not, it tends to spook those candidates. Even if you have full intention, it seems a little bit shady, not shady, but it seems like less sure. So yeah, I thought those were interesting. Anything else on the recruiting front or that you want to speak to those two points on?
Well, understanding where they came from so that you can create a scenario that they would, one, understand because of their prior experience. So if they've had stock options in the past, then stock appreciation rights can line up fairly effectively with stock options because they're measured the same way. It's just that stock appreciation rights aren't always settled with stock. They're settled in cash. So we can speak to them in language that they understand, that you're going to get a piece of the upside in the organization similar to a stock option without the exercise right. And then phantom stock plans are like restricted stock units in larger organizations too, where you might be awarded the shares, but you don't get to actually do anything with them until a series of events occurs, either financial outcomes or time. And we do the same thing with the, so we're trying to line up as close as possible what the candidate is experience. Now, we're not doing this for mid-level leaders. We're doing this for C-level, C-suite people that are running divisions, departments, or even whole companies. That's the kind of attention, or even salespeople that are really high-performing salespeople that have a complicated compensation package so that we can get it alignment. And having sat in the room in the negotiations with these candidates, I know from firsthand experience, if your plan is in concept stage, they're going to give it zero value.
Mm-hmm.
Because the number one thing we end up resolving in these equity compensation plans is promises made. And so these people may have been the victim of an undelivered promise from a previous business owner.
Got it. Having them, like anything, write it down, get it locked up.
Yeah. The deal before the deal.
Byron, so like we mentioned at the top, you've done this for you know, countless companies. The McFarland.group is the website if people want to go ahead and check out, get to learn more about you. Can you let people know who you're a great fit for? If someone's listening, what type of businesses and business owners and leadership teams do you really work best with, or do you fit perfectly with?
Yeah, so our clients tend to be owner-led. So our owners, or the majority owners, are involved in the day-to-day of the business. We do have clients that have outside investors, but those outside investors are minority investors. And so we work primarily with owners and the owner group. Secondly, they have a management team that is made up of at least 4 to 5 people. They may not have a CFO, maybe that's a fractional role, but they definitely have operations. They have sales or marketing. Then they might have some field leadership if they're in the construction business, or pre-construction is a key role. So since our business is primarily providing guidance to owners who want to either A, retain their management team through their business value by leveraging their business value, or they want to transfer ownership and control of their company to their management team, we need management in place before we get involved. So those would be our ideal. We do have a fair amount of building material, construction, general contractor, subcontractor, distribution business, some engineering, architecture, and some fiber technology and other communications businesses, and some advertising organizations, coincidentally.
And again, the website was themcfarland.group is the website. We'll link up to that in the show notes. Byron, are you up for doing a fast lightning round here before we wrap this up? You haven't heard these questions. I'm going to just feed them off to you and get your kind of real fast one word to one sentence answers on them.
I will do my best to follow the rule.
How would you describe the business environment in 1 to 3 words right now?
Cautiously optimistic.
What's one of the fondest memories from your childhood?
Fishing with my grandpa.
What part of the country?
South Dakota.
If you weren't living where you are now, where would you live?
Western slopes of the United States.
Western slopes. Any particular state, or just western slope of the Rockies, you mean? Or
yeah, western slope of the Rockies, Montana, Idaho, Western South Dakota, maybe some places in Wyoming. I'd even consider Northern California.
What's the hardest part of your business?
Dealing with the responsibility.
Favorite river in the U.S. to fish?
The Encampment River in Wyoming.
And what do you love about it so much?
The green drake hatch in June.
Oh, okay. You just go out there and it's just total mayhem on the top of the water?
I don't want to say when, but it's effing awesome.
Byron's very—he's like, I've said too much already. I'm gonna.
I should have said the bighorn in Montana. Everybody goes there already.
And this is a perennial favorite asked to everyone for years and years. How much money in the bank is enough? So this is, you know, either cash or security investments. If you had X amount in the bank, if you didn't make any more money in your life, that'd be, you know, you still have the opportunity to, but if you didn't, you'd be okay and you'd be comfortable with what you have. What's that number?
8 net.
8 net. And how many hours a week do you work?
30 to 35.
Okay. And then last question, what's the strangest incentive plan or KPI you've seen tied to an incentive plan that you've seen across your career?
Airplane miles.
Airplane miles. Can you talk a little bit more? Like, was it, so success was dependent upon how many airplane miles were flown?
No, the incentive was the reward was airplane miles on Wheels Up.
Oh, like you got credit card points, or like if you hit this metric, then you get 5,000 miles of tickets that we will buy you for airplanes?
You get so many hours of Wheels Up or Uber Air or whoever the provider was.
I see. Okay. Got it. Super interesting. Airline miles. Well, great. Byron, man, you didn't even, I mean, that was like 4 or 5 seconds at the most. You just whizzed through those. I thought we were going to have our editors do some magic, but no need. So
if you want to go back through them, I can reconsider my answers.
These are great. Looking forward to that fishing trip next summer. Byron, thank you so much. This has been, appreciate the work you did before with our group, and the McFarland.group is the website. So if this sounds interesting, if you'd like to work with Byron, learn more about it and have a management team and would like to either help retain them, incentivize them on the performance front, or you're recruiting and want some help, Byron is your man. So really enjoyed it. Thanks for all the advice. And yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Appreciate the opportunity, Andrew. Thank you for being such a gracious host.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted, high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest-rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.